The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome into Morning Invest. I am Clayton Morris. So glad to have you here on this Friday. We've got a ton of news to get to today. I do want to remind all of you before we get to the news to sign up for our daily newsletter. Just go to morninginvest.com. It's totally free. We put a lot of work into it. You can have the news delivered to your inbox first thing in the morning, around 6:30 in the morning. A couple of big stories that we're covering, some previews of what's coming up here on the show, plus some in case you missed it things like, hey, we covered today. I don't know if you know that Ridley Scott, we covered this in the newsletter, director Ridley Scott is he's 83 years old. He's now almost finished writing the sequel to Gladiator, Gladiator 2.
Oh, wow.
He's going to direct it. So a new Gladiator. I wonder if Russell Crowe will star in it. I don't know.
I sure hope so. I mean, how could you do that? It better.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's time,
it has
time
to have him. It can't have Joaquin Phoenix in it. But
time for Russell Crowe to hit the gym. I don't know if you've, time for him to get on some athletic greens. And
unless he's, taking on the role that...
Mentor?
Yeah, of what was the role of the other guy? The guy that let him go, ended up ultimately letting
him
go.
Oh, yeah.
Aurelius, or what? I can't remember what that guy's name was.
Yeah, is it Marcus Aurelius? I forget.
Yeah, I can't remember.
A few years. Anyway, yeah, so we covered that in the newsletter today. Morninginvest.com is a place to go. Sign up for the daily morning newsletter on this Friday. So hope you're doing all well, and it is time now to jump into your stimulus update this morning. So happy Friday. If you're just tuning in, wondering what in the world's going on, here's a quick rundown of what you missed on the stimulus front, okay? So there's been a lot of movement over the past 24 or 48 hours on the stimulus front. The House once again punted on a vote on the bipartisan infrastructure bill. So Nancy Pelosi basically punted on this. Joe Manchin still dealing with... we're not really sure exactly where Senator Manchin is on all of this, Senator Sinema, et cetera, but progressives have won this first round. They stood up to Joe Manchin. So because Nancy Pelosi punted this vote, Joe Manchin loses this first round. So does Kyrsten Sinema. So basically on what they'd support in a reconciliation package, we didn't really know, and they haven't really made it public. So we don't exactly know what's on their plan right now. For this legislation. It was a big blow, though, to these House moderates who had cut a deal with Nancy Pelosi to hold the vote on September 22nd. That's the thing. So there was supposed to be this vote on September 22nd, and she had made a deal with these moderates. But progressives had said, wait a second, we already had a deal. We had a deal. How are you making a separate deal? The deal was we're putting both of these big stimulus packages together so you don't screw us over. We're going to pass that $1 trillion bipartisan big dry hump to Wall Street, and then we're also going to get our $3.5 trillion stimulus package. We're going to pass them simultaneously so you don't screw us over again. Pelosi said she was going to hold a vote, and then suddenly, no, they're not. So it's an interesting battle unfolding. I mean, looking at Nancy Pelosi standing her ground to progressives, and in some ways also standing her ground to moderate. So she's trying to have it both ways, but she's good at this. So she was good, she's good at trying to negotiate both sides of this because now both sides have something to hang their hat on in this.
Since when were these senators and congresspeople able to bypass journalists and get full page articles in Wall Street Journal and all this stuff to write themselves?
Yeah, and not tell us what their positions are, you mean?
Yeah. Is this a new phenomenon? I mean,
I don't know. It's an interesting phenomenon. And the thing is, you know, these journalists try to get answers from these people and they can't actually get answers from them. Like yesterday, I don't know if you saw this. Let me see if I can find this quote here. So yesterday, a reporter was asking Joe Manchin about conflicts of interest now. Like, you know, obviously he's got all these ties to big coal and all of these other things, and his family has all these, you know, all these ties to different things. And so a reporter asked, see if I can pull this up here. Yeah, here it is. So this reporter asked Joe Manchin this yesterday. Regarding the energy company that the Manchins founded, your son still owns it, right? Doesn't he? Manchin, you'd do best to change the subject. Like, that's what he said to a reporter. You'd do best to change the subject. No. No. Let me get this right. Senator Manchin, you answer to us, not the other way around. You'd do best to change the subject.
Yeah. See, no. That's why these, like, if I was somebody and I was a journalist and I was going to be interviewing one of these people, what I would do on the side is I would set up my phone and I would go live. And the reason I would go live is try to get as many viewers. And like, you're going to really give me that answer in front of like 30,000 people right now? Really?
Right.
So no, you better answer this question. Cause if you get up and walk away, you're walking away from 30,000 viewers or whatever it would be.
I wish this would have streamed live yesterday, to your point. Yesterday, reporters asked him, they said, Joe, you know, why are you trying to go around this plan? Democrats had a plan that they were going to pass these spending bills together. Yesterday, in front of reporters, he said, what are you talking about? I don't know anything about these plans being passed together. Are you kidding me? Literally, he Joe Manchin and Stephanie Murphy from Florida are now saying that they that strategy never existed, which is total garbage. Bernie Sanders was asked about that two-track approach. We've been reporting it here on the show for months, how Democrats, progressives specifically, got them to make sure that they were going to pass both of these bills simultaneously, right? I mean, everyone watching this show right now knows that story. You're all educated. You've watched this show. You know that that was the deal, right? This is not news. So yesterday, Joe Manchin and Stephanie Murphy were like, we never heard of this plan. Like, literally, this is what they said. We never knew that this strategy existed. Murphy, in fact, went on to call it historical fiction. And Manchin said, that's news to me. I never knew about that. Never heard about that, he told reporters. He defended his position back in June on this two-track approach. So then they asked Bernie Sanders about it. They're like, Bernie, Joe Manchin says he doesn't know anything about a deal about having this two-track approach. And Bernie Sanders is like, really? It's easy to find. Just Google it. Like, Senator Bernie Sanders is like, what are you talking about? Have you lost your mind? Morons. Even June 24th, Nancy Pelosi at a press conference said she was firm in her position. I'll quote what Nancy Pelosi said. We will not take up a bill in the House and the Senate until the Senate passes the bipartisan bill and then a reconciliation bill. If there's no bipartisan bill, then we will just go to the Senate and when the Senate passes a reconciliation bill. But I'm hopeful that we will have the bipartisan bill. There ain't going to be no bipartisan bill unless we have a reconciliation bill. Okay. Like, they literally don't remember, or they just literally, I've seen interviews with Joe Manchin, you know, where I feel like he's just in a total bubble. Like, he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. People want to make fun of the cognitive decline of Biden. Look at Manchin. He literally is living in a freaking bubble with yes men, sycophants surrounding him. He has no idea what he's talking about.
Well, and why would they care? Because the thing is, like, so using Biden as an example, Biden said $2,000 checks will go out next week if I get into office, right? They had this whole campaign on it, and then it didn't happen. And then they come out and say, no, I never said that. I said we'd follow up with the difference. And then everybody's like, no, he never said that. Like, people start defending them when they say they never said it. When there's proof, you can show people video of them saying exactly what they said, and they're still like, yeah, but that's not what he meant. That's not what they meant. So that's why they keep doing it.
We're in a post, I don't even know how we would describe the era that we're in, right? I mean, like, literally, President Trump could get up there and say something, right? And then the next day, he could say, I never said that. And there's video, he literally the day before said it at a press conference. And like, he and Kayleigh McEnany, and they're like, no, he didn't say that. Like, where are we living? And we can't even, there's nothing to come back from in that now. Like, okay, you really? Here's video of you saying it.
Well, and not only that, they'll say that, no, they never said it. Then once you show them the video, they're like, well, but this is what he meant.
Right.
You know, this is what he was trying to say. Like, how do you know that? Like, they just say what they need to say at that moment to get out of the press conference, to get, you know, to get us all excited that this is going to come. But then behind closed doors, they say different things. Then they come out and say the reason that they did it. And they're like, well, I didn't say that, you know, and then people are like, well, they never said that. So it's just like, what are we living in? What is this? That's why I always say, believe what, like, look at what they do, not never what they say, because what they say is always like a lie.
It's always garbage. I mean, they all lie. I mean, we all know that. And by the way, Belinda says, what is a sycophant? Oh, it's a great word. A sycophant kind of, it's one of those words that sounds like what it means. Like, what is it? Like onomatopoeia? Like sycophant. Like, it's like it's someone who just blindly sort of sucks up to somebody, right? It's people, like, when you ever hear the term like yes men, when people surround themselves with yes men, they don't have any dissenting opinions. They just surround themselves with, oh, what do you think, Mr. Morris? Oh, that's so brilliant. Mr. Manchin, that's so brilliant. You're such a brilliant man.
So the actual definition of it is a person who acts obsequiously
towards
someone. Yeah, it's towards someone important in order to gain advantage.
Okay. So maybe they don't even necessarily believe that particular person, but they just suck up to that person to get something out of it.
It's like every celebrity's friend.
Right, right. It's entourage, right?
Yeah.
Right, it's entourage. That's, I guess, what it could be.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a perfect... perfect.
Well, and I shared that meme on Morning Invest on YouTube, that meme that says, if we lie to the government, it's a felony. If the government lies to us, it's politics. And that needs to change. Mm-hmm. Like, it should be a felony when they lie to us, too.
Yeah, that's going to happen. Both sides in this battle right now have something to hang their hat on. So Thursday began with House moderates begging for an infrastructure vote. Josh Gottheimer out of New Jersey begging for this. And then progressives vowed, said, no way, we will defeat the bill on the floor. So I'm here to say progressives win round one. Progressives held their ground. Good for them, finally. Clearly, progressives got the best of the moderates yesterday in a battle. But there was plenty for various Democratic factions to be encouraged about, because they all had some wins yesterday as they head into today's session. By the way, can I just say this? This is a little sidebar news nugget for you. This is not something you're going to see anywhere else, but this is a little nugget that I read about this morning and I thought was fascinating. Nancy Pelosi last night at 10 p.m., instead of saying, hey, we're done for the day, ending the legislative day, she literally basically just said, we're taking a break to go home and sleep, but didn't end the actual legislative day. So technically, the whole reason she did that was for the moderates, so that basically they could say that there was a vote on, if they vote today, it's technically still Thursday in Congress. Literally, it's like they've taken a time machine. So Thursday's legislative session is technically, at this hour, still in session. Meaning that if they vote today, then moderate Democrats will say, see, I told you we voted on Thursday, technically, and they get a win. Isn't that amazing? Like, literally, that's what Nancy Pelosi did just to appease some of those moderates in the party.
Jeez.
Who would even think of that? Nancy Pelosi thought of it. And hey, it's a good little strategy, right? So that they can actually say, we didn't know. We said we were going to have a vote on Thursday. It's technically still legislative Thursday. So even though it's Friday for you, it's Thursday for Congress, by the way. Just a little, I thought you'd find that fascinating. Anyway, progressives. It's fair to say that progressive Democrats are moving with new urgency right now. They're definitely not going to just give into Nancy Pelosi and the rest of the Democratic caucus. That's important for the group because it's 96 members of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. They stuck together. And 96 members of the Progressive Caucus showed just how much influence it actually does have. So good for them. But progressives also found out yesterday that they have a lot more compromising to do, considering that they're about $2 trillion away from Joe Manchin's top line number right now. And there's still confusion as to what Kyrsten Sinema will accept. We don't know. She's out just like riding bikes and accepting money from donors. So we don't know what the hell she wants. Meanwhile, hey, go ahead.
I was just going to say she's also wearing earrings that don't match her clothes.
How dare she?
I know. It's like you can do all the other stuff. I don't care. But do yeah. just get have some dignity.
The backlash for Sinema is pretty strong right now.
I mean, yeah. Her own party in her state is like giving her ultimatums.
They voted to censure her, basically. Yeah. a vote of no confidence. Overwhelmingly. No confidence, yeah. They're like, you know, we're watching you. We're watching you. How you vote on this, we're watching you. We have a vote of no confidence out for your neck right now. And Philadelphia Inquirer this morning, reading the Philadelphia papers, was amazing. They're like, this is what happens when you don't remove money from politics. Kyrsten Sinema, perfect example of what you wind up with. Money in politics. Kyrsten Sinema is like the poster child for this right now.
You know what we need? We need Walter Solchuk to take a bat to her Corvette and be like, this is what happens, Kyrsten. This is what happens when you don't do your homework or something like that. Is this your homework, Larry?
I don't know.
Did you ever see The Big Lebowski?
I don't think I'm quite familiar with that phrase.
I don't know if I remember that one or not.
You never saw The Big Lebowski?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did. I don't remember the... Was there a...
Where he finds the homework in the car, like the briefcase is stolen.
Oh,
he's
right,
like,
I'm
going to teach you a lesson. And he goes out and beats the crap out of what he thinks is the kid's Corvette, and it ends up being the neighbor's.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Hey, Joanne Morgan says, hey, Clayton and David, I was a subscriber for over a year. My debit credit card changed. My subscription ended. Now I have to start over with the colored dog icons. Makes me sad.
Oh, sorry. I wish there was something we could do, but there's nothing we can do about that.
It's all YouTube back in.
Yeah.
Thank you. My haircut, Lady Drew. Lady Drew says my haircut looks good. Thank you so much. My son's looks good too. So anyway, let's talk about the moderates now. We talked about the progressives on this. Moderates, they hate to say it, but I mean, I think we predicted, well, I hate to say this. I think we predicted this back in August, didn't we? There was never a doubt that the moderates' whole push for this September 27th vote pushed progressives. And I think in many ways, they probably overstepped their bounds here. Like, I think they were testing this. They're like, are progressives really going to stand here, draw a line in the sand? It was like testing AOC. And then guess what? They did. House Democratic Caucus, they drew a line in the sand. So that deal was worth nothing. That whole the deal that they gave with Nancy Pelosi for the September 27th vote, worth nothing. Representative Josh Gottheimer even went on CNN yesterday and said that he was 1,000% certain that there would be a House vote on the infrastructure bill, and he said it would pass on Thursday night. It didn't happen. So sorry, guys. Moderates lose this first round, but we'll see if they ultimately win the war, which is, you know, what sort of money will be lowered in all of this and where the top line is. So a lot of people wondering, you know, what the heck does Manchin want? I've gotten emails from you. You're like, what in the world does Joe Manchin want? There's been a lot of mystery around, like, what is his number? What is he doing? Like, what does he want? Well, interestingly, one of the big mysteries in all of this is what exactly do the two Democrats want? Really, Senator Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. What are they holding out for? They've been both like really, really coy about the whole thing in public. They're not saying what exactly they want. What is the top line number?
That's because they're getting it behind the scenes. They're getting what they want. They're getting donor money.
Right. But so is it the donor money? And then here's what I think, right? Because Joe Manchin says he doesn't want the $3.5 trillion over 10 years. So is it that he doesn't want, he doesn't care about the money so much. He cares about the taxes and what these big businesses are going to pay in taxes. He's couching it, though, as this top line number. And I think it's his backwards way of trying to get this taxes lowered so that he can, because if he comes out publicly against the taxes, that doesn't look good. But if he comes out against the overspending, that looks better.
Right. But I think that that's a direct result because the donors are like, look, dude, we're not going to donate to your campaign anymore if you make our taxes go up. Mm. So he's like, okay, so this is going to be my position, you know, and he has to find a way to make it look like it's not because he's getting money to us when ultimately that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. I mean, last night Manchin released that whole screed about the financial insanity of spending lots of money on social programs while raising taxes on the Americans wealthiest to pay for it. He said, like, I don't like this idea. But he wasn't terribly specific about any changes that he wants to the package either, other than insisting that we should wait to see whether poor people stop being poor, basically. That's like basically.
Well, I think that's
plan.
Intentional because the more he's clear on his position, the more of a trail there is to why. You know what I mean? So the more vague they can be, the more that they can play it off that it's ethics.
I mean, really, the only thing. Yeah, I mean, the only thing I think that it came down to is for him to say, you know, maybe Congress should just wait to see how poor people really are. You know, like how poor are you? And then also we should means test any new benefits to make sure that the middle class won't support the bill since it's frozen out of getting any help, right? We're going to means test this. So based on, you know, can you prove that you're really suffering?
Here's
I would
what
like
they
you
could
to
do.
Prove that you're really suffering.
Why don't they means test UBI in West Virginia, the poorest state in the nation almost?
Universal basic income in West Virginia.
Yeah.
Why don't we use that as a pilot program? You could means test that. One of the poorest countries, one of the unhealthiest states in the country. And I don't say that because I'm being mean about West Virginia. I love West Virginia. I live there. I love the people.
My best friend is from there. I love them too.
And they just get screwed routinely by people like this, by people like Joe. There was an article this morning in The Guardian called, Joe Manchin is really a coal baron. Like he's still every year receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars from the coal industry. Like in new investigative journalism piece this morning in The Guardian, over $500,000 a year at minimum he's getting from these fossil fuel companies.
Well, not to mention the kickbacks he's probably getting from his son and daughter with what they're doing.
Right. Yeah, but we can't talk about that. You know, you're not allowed if you're a reporter and you ask him that question. Hey, Joe, you know, the energy company the Manchin founded, your son still owns that, doesn't he? You'd do best to change the subject, reporter. Oh, I'm sorry. Don't you work for us? Like,
well,
we're
journalists. What's sad is,
whereas to ask you that question, you'd do best to change the subject.
And what's sad is that journalist probably did.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, Mr. Manchin. I don't want to lose this interview. I don't want to lose access to being able to interview you, get answers for things. So as for Kyrsten Sinema, she's even been less clear. Asked whether or not the rest of the Democratic caucus knows where she is, she hilariously said, "I'm clearly right in front of the elevator." Because who the heck knows? She thinks she's like Jesus or something. Like, I'm right in front of the elevator. I'm standing right here. We don't know what your position on anything is. Like, you want to tell us what you want? Or are you just going to continue to take money from all these people? However, good reporting today from Politico. They have managed to get their hands on a copy, and we're going to show it to you, a copy of a July 28th document that it says Joe Manchin had been handing out to Senate colleagues who wanted to know what his position on the reconciliation bill might be, if he'd be so kind. So internally, he'd been handing out like his own memo of what he wants in his on his list. But he's never told us. And when reporters have asked him about it, he's been cagey and sidestepped the question. Clearly, he knows. So it's
And really quick, if you look at like the people that know their position, they're the people that aren't bought and paid for. The people that know and are clear with their position and they tell you exactly what their position is, you can almost guarantee that that person is not getting money to have that position. If they have getting money for a position, then they're all over the place because they don't want people to figure out that they're doing that just for money. So it's like that's one way that you can usually tell somebody who's in it for the lobbyists or in it for like because it's something they truly care about.
Yeah. Do you think this list, I'm going to go through this list here. Do you think that this list, this is Joe Manchin's list of what he wants in the budget resolution? Look at the top line. $1.5 trillion for the top line. Now, I'm going to go through some of this. I know it's a little hard to read here on your screen, but I'll give you some of the pullaways that I see.
Well, can I ask, like, what, like, yeah. Isn't that still an arbitrary number? Where the heck did he come up with the number? Like, you know what I mean? Like, let's just say 1.5.
Yeah. Oh, it is all arbitrary. I mean, you can't wrap your head around any of this money that Washington spends anyway. So what are you basing this on? So he says any revenue exceeding $1.5 trillion should be used for deficit reduction. Any money that we spend beyond that should be used towards deficit reduction. He wants the corporate tax rate, at 25%, okay? That's barely an increase. Corporate domestic minimum tax, 15%. Raise the top rate on ordinary income, 39.6%. Raise the capital gains rate, 28% all in. I mean, very, very minimal tax increases, right? He also doesn't want spending on innovation, not elimination. He wants fuel neutral. But the key, one of my big takeaways here is the fossil fuel. If tax credits for solar and wind are included and extended, then fossil fuel tax credits are not repealed. So basically, vehicle and fuel tax credits shall not be limited just to electric vehicles. He wants them to include hydrogen, and he also wants fossil fuels, of course, involved in this. So make no mistake about it, guys. The reason he wanted to talk about this publicly is because of all of these giveaways for the fossil fuel industry. Right there. Good reporting from Politico, getting your hands on this. So it's a brief outline of some fairly radical changes that he'd like to make to Biden's first term agenda, like slashing most all of it. It's amazing.
Well, and think about it. Think about it this way. He's saying that 28% or whatever corporate interest rate or whatever tax rate. Just think, he's got it at $1.5 trillion with that. Let's say they decided to just bump it up to 30. Just 2% would probably take that number from the 1.5 to the 3.5 that they want in the first place. Mm-hmm. Just a couple percentage points. So why can they never think that way? Because that benefit, that hurts their buddies just a little bit too much. Like that 2% is going to sting so much they just can't do it.
Yeah, no, because he's taken this money before. But he's not been quiet about, I dug this up from 2008. Manchin back then demanded a bank bailout before slamming the entitlement mentality, which he's doing now, right? So he demanded the bank bailout in 2008. He played a pivotal role in pushing for a massive Wall Street bailout that funneled hundreds of billions of dollars of public money to the banks whose financial crisis destroyed the global economy and ravaged West Virginia with mass foreclosures.
Wonder what industry he was invested in.
Shocking. Yeah. All you need to do is read about his dirty empire and all of his big rewards from coal companies and on and on and on. These are the guys right now holding this up because they're going to try to push for that. We'll see where we come. But right now, I have to say it was a good night last night. Progressives held firm on this, held their ground, did not allow moderate Democrats to win this first round. They held their ground. So 96 members of the Progressive Caucus said, nope, we're not giving this up. And now we'll see where we come down on this $2.5, $2 trillion number. We'll see. Let me know your thoughts on that in the chat below. We'll be keeping our eyes on Manchin, Sinema, and the whole crowd. We've got more news to get to here on the show. I want to talk about America going on strike, workers demanding change, and it's happening more and more and more. We're going to show you where across the country. And maybe they're taking a cue from what Europeans have done. We'll show you what workers at McDonald's and others in other parts of the world have managed to do and are being paid handsomely for it with benefits. We'll tell you about that coming up on the show. But first, I want to tell you about if you want an affordable e-bike, one that can power your family around, drive around, save some money, get outdoors, zoom up the steepest hills, you've got to check out our friends over at Rad Power Bikes. My wife wants one of these so badly to be able just to ride down the street, just get down the street and go to, you know, go to the butcher, or go to the breads, you know, what do you call it? Bakery?
The butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker.
Yeah. Just, you know, take one of the Rad Power Bikes and you can have like with a basket on
back.
Holy
cow. Look at the size of that battery.
Yeah. These things, I mean, it's amazing because you can get like up to 20 miles per hour without pedaling at all if you want to. You can do that if you want, or you can ride. So you can set it to different five different levels, which is really great. You can zoom up steep hills without getting hot, sweaty, tons of fun, whether you're just running some errands or taking the kiddos on an adventure or commuting back to the office. It's more important to get out of the house these days than ever before. There's a great way to do it.
Now that right there, the removable battery that you could get a secondary battery, I wonder how long that battery lasts because that's a big battery.
Oh, they last for a long time. Absolutely a long time because you can, you know, you don't have to worry about running out. I mean, Rad Power Bikes was voted the best affordable electric bike in five categories by electricbikereview.com. But even better, they're North America's largest electric bike brand and they're half the price of most e-bikes. Do you want to enjoy the outdoors while also limiting your carbon footprint? You can do that by grabbing a Rad Power Bike. Most Rad Power Bikes are affordable. Most e-bikes are in the $3,000 range. Rad Power Bikes start at just $999. And most are under $1,500. Great for commuting, getting out on the trail, hauling groceries, taking your kids out. It's very, very easy to do. Their customer support is fantastic. It's a perfect for a gift for someone, too, for the holidays. So if it's someone wants a new bike in your family, consider one of the Rad Power Bikes. And guess what, guys? If you text the word morning to 64,000 on your smartphone, you'll get free shipping. So if you text the word morning, just pick out your smartphone, text the word morning to 64,000. I want to get one of those where you can put the kids on. 64,000. You'll get free shipping. And you can actually you can get financing for as low as 0% APR. So you can get financing as well, flexible financing. So now for a limited time, Rad Power Bikes offers flexible financing for low as 0% APR plus free shipping. Bikes are going super fast. So make sure you order right away for Christmas. Text morning to 64,000 today. Get free shipping. That's morning to 64,000. Text morning to 64,000. Terms apply. Available at radpowerbikes.com/terms. Again, text morning to 64,000. Our thanks to Rad Power Bikes. Which one would you get? Would you get one with the basket or would you like the, they have a whole bunch of different ones.
Yeah, I don't tend to like the sportier looking one. So if they had one with knobby tires and more of a, you know, but I definitely wouldn't want a passenger. So I'd like the basket more than another seat.
Yeah, they've got a bunch of those. So check out, they have a whole bunch of different styles. So go to Rad Power Bikes and check them out and then text the word morning if you want free shipping. So our thanks to them. All right, we've got more news to get to as the day continues today. Let's talk about this. America going on strike. You right?
Yeah, I was just going to say the Rad Rover is what that looks really cool.
The Rad Rover.
Yeah.
See if I can find it. Rad Rover. Rad Rover, Rad Rover. David's.
The Rad Rover 6 Plus step through.
Cool. Yeah, check them out on their website.
Sorry.
All right. No worries. let's talk about America going on strike. It turns out that more and more Americans, more and more businesses are now happening. They're more and more businesses are going on strike, pulling out the picket signs. Watch out corporate America, because a tidal wave of worker strikes is developing nationwide. Just take a look at this laundry list of strikes. A reporter, Jonah Furman, put together just like a smaller list. He said, there are so many potential strikes brewing right now. 60,000 film and television workers, 24,000 nurses at Kaiser in California, 700 building engineers are already on strike, 2,000 telecom workers, 2,000 telecom workers on strike in California, 2,000 nurses in Buffalo, New York, on strike. 600 group home workers in Connecticut on strike. Beaumont, Texas truck drivers or bus drivers are on strike. Graduate students in Illinois, New York, and Massachusetts. And what's interesting about the graduate students thing, like you might, like if you dive into that and you're like, oh, I feel bad for graduate students, like you're joking. Well, actually, if you look into it and you don't quite understand it, it's actually really interesting. I mean, they end up like working for the universities for like nothing. They do all of this like grunt work. And they're sort of forced to. It's almost sort of like forced labor in those situations. So it's interesting if you dive into it. And that's not an exhaustive list, just a sampling, Jonah says. Washington State, carpenters on strike. Have you heard about that up there in Washington State at all?
Clayton, I strongly suggest you change the subject.
Massachusetts nurses. Alabama miners. Kentucky whiskey makers. Machinists in the Quad Cities. Auto mechanics in Chicagoland. Teachers in Pennsylvania. John Deere United Auto Workers in Iowa, Illinois, Kansas, 300 flight attendants in Piedmont Airlines. The list is on and on and on. A tidal wave of strikes happening across the nation.
They had to know this was coming. You know what I mean? Like, you can't keep treating people the way that these places are treating people and making it so like you're, when people can't afford their basic human needs, right? Food, shelter, you're giving them no choice. They're going to have to do something to get those things. And so they've just created a scenario where this is inevitable. What was it John Kennedy said? Those that make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable, right? Mm-hmm. Or peaceful protest impossible make violent protest inevitable. And this is, it's where we're heading.
Right. Yeah, I mean, look at all these are peaceful protests, but they're demanding change. And corporations are walking all over people on a regular basis, and people are getting sick of it. And they're saying enough is enough. And you're seeing this tidal wave of worker strikes across the country right now developing. I mean, we saw the efforts by Amazon to stop the unionization at the Amazon plant in Alabama, right? Bernie Sanders flew down there. Amazon spent thousands of dollars with propaganda inside the facility trying to get them to not unionize. The Frito-Lay plant, where some workers were saying they're literally working like 3 months straight without a day off. 3 months straight without a day off.
Well, and what a smack in the face it is to these people that are working their asses off every single week, hours and hours and hours, putting in overtime, trying to help these companies. While their CEOs are getting bonuses, they're out on yachts. Jeff Bezos is flying to space and getting subsidies from our government of upwards of $10 billion. And that's just like right in the face of the people that are making him that money. If it weren't for these people, he wouldn't have a dime.
Or think about you're right. And think about the people that are on the front lines too, right? Like, so they're out there working at grocery stores or at CVS or Walgreens, and these CEOs at those plant companies are making bank, right? Like, think about Walgreens, right? Here's I love this guy's profile pic, by the way. You should do this for your Tinder profile. Christopher says Walgreens' new CEO got a salary plus a $5 million a year sign-on bonus for 5 years.
Jesus.
Yeah. Thank you, Kristen. Kristen says, keep bringing us the truth, Clayton and David. You two rock. Best part of the morning. This is knowing I get to watch your show. Thank you, Kristen. Appreciate that. We'll keep bringing you the truth. Think about that though, right? $5 million bonus, you know, a signing bonus on top of this salary.
I mean, just think,
I'm sorry, a $5 million sign-on bonus.
Yeah. Sign-on bonus.
Yeah.
So think about this. Think of every big corporation that's out there that are doing things like this, that have those workers out there striking. Just think if they all took Dan Price's approach. You would not have these protests. You would have people happy. You would have them being able to supply their basic human needs, food and everything. But they don't. It's all about their shareholders and all about profit. And people are realizing, like, they're seeing that. Like, it's become so divided that it's such a difference in lifestyle that they're just, like, why would they take it anymore?
Yeah. It's makes no sense at all. I mean, and these people who are saying like, look, all I, and they're not even like the Frito-Lay people, they weren't even like demanding a raise. They were literally saying, hey, can I just have like a day off? Like that, I mean, really? So I wanted to call your attention to this because we're seeing a wave of strikes across the United States, which I am, and by the way, you won't see it covered on the national news anywhere. Good luck trying to find stories about workers for big corporations going on strike. I guarantee if you tune into Lester Holt tonight on NBC Nightly News, you're not going to see their stories about a wave of striking workers across the United States. Not going to happen. Not going to happen. So you need to come here to get your news like that. But the reason I, that part of it I wanted to show you, but then I wanted to look at how other countries have managed to do this. So I want to turn our attention to Scandinavia once again. And specifically, let's talk about Denmark this morning. So we keep hearing in the United States, like, oh my God, if you raise the minimum wage to $22 an hour, you're just going to bankrupt these companies, and they'll pass on the food prices to the employee or to the consumers, and there's just no way they can do it, right? So this is a story I meant to bring you last week when we lost internet access, but this story out of Denmark is really fascinating. And it's about McDonald's workers in Denmark who won through the benefits of striking.
Well, so, it says McDonald's hamburger restaurant. It like looks like it's from the 50s.
Yeah. Hamburger restaurant. So when this is a really fascinating story. And when what happened was when McDonald's first opened in Denmark in 1981, what happened was, they at that point, it was operating in over 20 different countries, and it had successfully avoided unions, okay, in all but one country, Sweden. Then McDonald's arrived in Denmark, and the labor market there was governed by a set of sectoral labor agreements that established the wages and conditions for the workers in a given sector. So under the norms, McDonald's should have adhered to the hotel and restaurant union agreement, but they didn't have to do so legally speaking. Okay, this is fascinating. So McDonald's opted to go around the Denmark's country's norms to save a buck. Okay, shocking, I know, right? Then the union, so the union agreement is non-binding on sector employers in the same way that a contract is. You can't sue a company for ignoring it. It's strictly voluntary. So basically in Denmark, all of like the Denmark companies would adhere to this agreement, right? Because it's, hey, it's, we're Denmark, our workers are also Dutch, so we love them, we're going to support them. Here comes McDonald's, big corporate, you know, greed monster, right? We're going to set up shop here in Denmark, and oh, it's cute that you guys have these union laws here that are not really laws, but they're kind of like frameworks. I'm going to ignore them. Okay. This is fascinating. Stay with me. Stay with me. So what happened? This is why I'm saying this is the power of the people, okay? When people do this, we can make change. So what happened? Well, McDonald's decided not to follow the union agreements, and it set up its own pay levels and work rules instead. This was a departure, not just from what Danish companies did, but even from what other similar foreign companies did. So McDonald's was like, we don't care. Like, we're going to do our own thing. We get to walk all over Americans. We're here in Denmark. We're going to do whatever the F we want, right? So even Burger King, which is identical to McDonald's in all relevant respects, decided to actually follow the union agreement when it came to Denmark. Burger King was like, okay, well, you guys, this is how you guys do it. We'll do it that way. Not McDonald's. So then guess what? The decision from McDonald's drew all sorts of attention from the Danish labor movement. And the struggle to get McDonald's to follow the hotel and restaurant workers agreement began in 1982, but the efforts were very slow at first. McDonald's maintained that it had a principled position against unions and negotiations, and the press were unable to move them off of that position. Well, then it only took a few short years. The unions decided that was enough, and they called sympathy strikes. So get this. Not just the people that were working in the McDonald's went on strike, but all of the other industries that were adjacent to the hotel and restaurant association went on strike as well. 16 different sectors rose up and said, no way. And they participated in these sympathy strikes. Dock workers, listen to this. Dock workers refused to unload containers that had McDonald's equipment in them. Printers refused to print supplies to give to the McDonald's stores, such as menus and cups. Construction workers refused to build McDonald's stores and even stopped construction on a store that was already in progress. They're like, sorry, you're not going to pay the workers that work here? We're not building your little store for you. Then the typographers union. Did you know there was a typographers union? People that, you know, deal with fonts, printing. They refused to place McDonald's advertisements in any publications. Then they couldn't print any advertising. Nothing. Truckers refused to deliver food and beer to the McDonald's locations. Food and beverage workers that worked at the facilities that prepared the food for the stores refused to work on any McDonald's products. It totally destroyed their supply chain. And what do you think happened? Once those sympathy strikes got underway, McDonald's folded like a cheap suit.
They had to.
I got chills just thinking about it. Like, I just love this stuff. So what happened? McDonald's workers in Denmark paid $22 an hour. I bring this up because, you know, there's a lot of these economies in the Nordic countries, and they're so much more equal. They're so much more equal than ours. I mean, they have an economy of workers. They have their health care paid for. They get paid time off. They get like 6 weeks time off. They are taken care of.
Imagine that same scenario in the United States, right? Where you have, you know, truck companies and stuff not delivering all that. What would those people do here? Truck companies would push people out of the way to deliver. They would try to hire new people to replace those people that had an issue. And the people would be the bad people. It wouldn't be a sympathy. It would be a sympathy towards the corporation, not towards the people.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that's exactly. We're so sad that Bank of America is losing some mortgage money because they can't ruin people's lives by, you know how the story goes in America. But here, my gosh, you know, here's an opportunity where all of these industries get together and say, no, we're going to go on strike because we don't want you guys screwing. And I think what they recognized is once we allow this one company to walk all over us, it's a short rope. You know, it's a short walk for the next company to start doing it, and then the next company to start doing it.
And think of this, $22 an hour with no worry of healthcare, no worry of college loan debt, no worry of any of that stuff. So $22 an hour is a good wage. Mm-hmm. Here, it wouldn't be because of all the other costs we have thrown on us from those things, healthcare, college loans, and stuff like that.
Yeah, they have no student loan debt. They have healthcare. They have paid time off. Like, it's a career. Like, they actually make a decent wage, you know, and they're able to pay for things that they need. They don't have to work three jobs in order to make ends meet in Denmark. Remarkable. Stunning. I know. You know, it's interesting too, that sympathy strikes in the United States are illegal. Isn't that amazing? Like, industries can't get together and strike simultaneously out of sympathy. Like, in the United States, that's illegal.
But that's capitalism. If you want capitalism, that's the free market right there.
Can't do it.
Wow.
It's illegal. Sorry in the United States. Can you imagine though? Like, if they tried to make it illegal, like if the Finnish government tried to ban sympathy strikes, it would never fly. I mean, you know, this is what Norway, this is what Denmark, this is what Finland, this is what these guys, you can't ban sympathy strikes. They're there to protect the people. So this is, once again.
Well, that's like, and even when you can do those, any kind of strike or any kind of, you know, protest, now more and more, you're stuck to these. You have to stay in this area. This is the free speech zone, or this is the protest zone. You can't go outside of this fence. If you get outside of this fence, you're going to get hit with billy clubs and maced and all this other stuff. It's ridiculous.
Yep. Sad. You got to stand in your little corner and protest.
Yeah.
That's all you can do. Hey, we got more news to get to. I want to get this, and we're going to also get to your pet photos. I want to talk about how Portugal managed to beat COVID in just a minute, and then we're going to get to your pet photos. But first, tell you about our friends over at Rothy's. So my wife, when I told them Rothy's was sponsoring the show, she said, get out of here. I love Rothy's. My favorite. I love them. And I said, well, they're once, you know, the reason she loves them too is because of what they do for the environment. So Rothy's Shoes is now selling men's sneakers and men's driving loafers. So it's not just for women anymore. That's right. And they basically repurpose millions of plastic water bottles into shoes. Isn't that amazing? Instead of like that going into the ocean. So they do amazing stuff for sustainability. Rothy's men's shoes are knit with 100% recycled materials. Even the sneaker laces are made from plastic water bottles. Everything Rothy's makes is better for the planet. Their elevated style is achieved through innovative manufacturing materials. So if you hate when your favorite white sneakers or light-colored shoes get dirty, Rothy's men's shoes are for you. Their innovative, washable construction means your shoes look like new with every wash that you make. No wonder why Rothy's best-selling men's shoes, the driving loafer in Navy, gets a 5-star review from almost every customer. So I really, really love their design. My wife loves her. She wears the small, like the small red ones. She loves them. Esquire makes a case. Pick up a pair of Rothy's men's shoes before they sell out. Forbes called Rothy's men's shoes a travel must-have. They're super comfortable right out of the box too. There's not like, you don't need like a week or so of breaking them in. They're really, really great. And we talk all about here, like sustainability and making sure that like plastic water bottles don't end up in the ocean. And so here they're actually turning that into something you can wear and that will last for a long, long time. So to help welcome the fall season in style, Rothy's is doing something special right now. That's right. They gave us the chance to share this super rare opportunity with our listeners for a limited time. Right now, you can get $20 off, $20 off your first purchase at rothys.com/invest. That's rothys.com/invest. Head to rothys.com/invest to find your new favorite pair of shoes today. Ladies and men, go check out Rothy's right now. Go check them out.
Don't you have a story about shoes?
Shoes?
Yeah. Like shoes. Your mom said something about shoes or something. Hmm? Shoes? Like your Forrest Gump shoe story?
No. My mama said, those look like comfortable shoes. My mama always said, well, those are my running shoes. I like comfortable shoes. I like comfortable shoes. Dean says, can I skip the middleman and just cut foot holes in my plastic water bottles? I wouldn't try that, Dean. I wouldn't try that. I'd probably cut your feet off.
Yeah.
Kristen says, those do look comfortable. Do they come in 6-inch heels? 6-inch heels. Now that's hot.
Kristen has a heel obsession.
How can you walk, Kristen, in 6-inch heels? Like, I don't
Very
understand.
Carefully.
Like the heels I wear are like 3 inches, you know?
Yeah.
Like on a night out. I don't know. Mark Sparks, Morning Invest and Coast to Coast are my favorite shows. Thank you, Mark. Coast to Coast, one of my favorite shows too. I've got, you know, my Paranormal Post channel. And so I'd like to do some stuff on, I've got some things in the works on the paranormal side. And I'd like to do some things on Coast to Coast if I could at some point. Kind of swim in those similar places with them, similar audience. Okay, let's talk about Portugal, shall we? So, interestingly, what's going on in Portugal is really become like a case study for the rest of the world. The Portuguese are traditionally well disposed towards getting the jabs, which of course eased the rollout to begin with. The vaccination rate against measles, mumps, rubella, for example, in Portugal, 95%, one of the European Union's highest. There's no, and in Portugal, there was also like, they just haven't done anything political about it. Like when the COVID hit, like in the United States, it suddenly became this like political battle, you know, it was like MAGA versus whatever. I don't know, just became absolutely crazy. People's Facebook feeds were exploding and you just didn't have that in Portugal. And this morning, Portugal has nearly run out of people to vaccinate and asking the question, like, what comes next? Statistically, it's interesting. They've actually hit for elderly people, a 100% vaccination rate for Portuguese, 100% for seniors. unbelievable. And the data right now is pretty overwhelming. I went through the data and it's remarkable to look at when they managed to get everyone vaccinated, just about, I mean, other than like kids under, you know, a certain age, who are not even passing it. So there's data to show now, like in schools, like kids that get it don't even pass it. It's like they're asymptomatic, they metabolize it, and they don't really pass it to other kids, according to the research. And so spoke to an infectious disease doctor about this just yesterday about it. So there's no passing of it. There's very little of it right now. And so in Portugal, you also have no anti-vaccination movement. There's just no, you know, like in the United States, you have like big anti-vax forums and all of this kind of stuff.
Well, and they also recognize natural immunity.
Yeah. Yeah. So they, and their national health ministry recognizes natural immunity. And so they won't even let you get a jab if you've had COVID in the past 6 months. Like, they won't even let you get it because your antibodies are so high. Now, there are some concerns right now in the data, and they are admitting this in Portugal. They're saying, you know, what we've done is we took an approach to this. The head of the vaccination movement in Portugal is a former submariner. So he spent like 4 years of his life in submarines. He's 6'4". He's become like a national celebrity. He's been on the TV. He's almost like the Dr. Fauci, but this guy was like, no nonsense. He's like, here's what we're going to do. We can't just have like little flu vaccine places set up around the country, like going to your little corner, like pharmacy. No, no, we need a national response. And so they set up sports arenas, all sorts of sports halls and things like that, basketball arenas and so forth, so that they became like centers where you can go and get vaccinated. And even when they had, this is fascinating, even when they had the, remember the AstraZeneca controversy a few months ago in Europe, where there was like blood clot news about AstraZeneca? He was on the news saying, I'm going to read his quote because it's pretty fascinating. He said, let me pull up his quote here. What did he say? Oh yeah. So he delivered his message. Here he is. Here's the submariner. And he delivered his message night after night on Portuguese television studios, dressed in his military fatigues. And so he went on television, and in March, as news about a rare blood clot linked to AstraZeneca threw Europe into a panic, he went on to put the risk in context. He described two roads, one for those who chose the vaccine and the other for those who chose to wait. On the road for the vaccinated, a sniper would kill one out of every 500,000. He said, on the other road for the unvaccinated, a sniper would kill one out of every 500. He said, so which road do you want to go on? And the Portuguese were like, I'll go on that road. I'll go on that road over there. And it worked. Almost 100% vaccination right now. So now you're saying, okay, well, did it work? Now, the data is interesting. When you start to pour through the data, what they're saying is that when they actually had the vaccine rolled out, I mean, they were having a pretty high death count. So now that they've got everyone vaccinated, overwhelming case numbers have come plummeting down. Hospital saturation also came plummeting down. Deaths went way, way down, almost to zero, as a result of having everyone vaccinated. So that's a good case study to look at, a country where you have almost total vaccination.
Can I ask, like, what was the percentage of them that took the AstraZeneca versus others? Do you know that, those numbers?
Okay. No, and I was pouring through the ministry's website to see like the different data, but I could only get like the timelines of when, because I mean, I personally am in Portugal. I got the J&J. And then like my wife got, I forget what she got, either Moderna or Pfizer or whatever. I'm not sure.
But was AstraZeneca available as well in your country?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely one that was being used, you know. And they said overwhelmingly, it looks like it wasn't, most people got the double shot in Portugal. So almost overwhelming, it wasn't the J&J, which I'm having like buyer's remorse on that one, you know, like, but anyway, so now the question is, well, how strong are these things going forward? And what they're saying is what we are noticing since the first round of jabs to now among those older populations is that they're noticing, especially looking at nursing homes and other home care in Portugal, they're noticing that those antibodies have declined significantly. And so saying right now, we need to sort of weigh the risks and see what's going to happen here. They're offering blood tests to researchers right now at a bunch of the different nursing homes. The reason I'm bringing Portugal up, not just because I live here, but because they have, this is really like a study in what other countries could learn, you know, could learn from this. So they're giving blood tests to researchers from these nursing homes, and they're seeing that the antibodies are declining from those that got the jab. So what next? That's the great question. They've disbanded their main sort of war council because they've got the whole country vaccinated. They're basically reducing and eliminating, like Norway did, any further restrictions. It's pretty much going to be wide open now. And they're saying, we won. We won the battle. We haven't won the war. We won the battle. So now they said it's incumbent upon the rest of the world to get up to snuff. So what is Portugal doing? They're taking their additional shots and they're basically marshaling the same resources that they used here to go to the rest of the world to make sure that they're taken care of. Like in Africa, where they don't have access to it, or they just have had a low response or a low vaccination rate. So Portugal's like saying, hey, let's load it up. Let's go. Going to Mozambique and Macau and other places around the world to make sure that they're also covered. The United States. Wouldn't it have been great if the United States could have done that? Richest country in the world, has access to these patents and so forth, could help these other countries? No. No, can't do it because of the money. I just think it's fascinating right now. Even if Portugal, so they're saying right now, we don't want the booster shots. We're not there yet. We're not going to do that. Right now, we're, you know, you've got, you know, they're reopening senior centers. They're finally allowing them to see their children. They're saying like, this is, we were depressed. We were miserable. We couldn't see our grandkids. We couldn't see our loved ones. Now they're able to go out, go to the parks, go to movies, go to the mall, go to see. And it's, they're saying it's, oh my God, I feel like I'm alive again. These whole, has the it elderly also people.
Opened incoming travel.
Yeah. Incoming travel has been pretty, I mean, there's, you'd see like Americans coming in. To get in, though, of course, you have to prove a negative COVID test. You have to show a negative COVID test to get in. If you're in the European Union, you still have to present yourself with one of the vaccine cards to show that you're vaccinated. But again, we know about the transmission even with a vaccine. So who knows right now? But, you know, this is just an example of a country that hasn't made it political at all. There's no significant anti-vax movement. Everyone went along with it, and you had a government.
And they're not persecuting.
There's no mandates. There's no persecution. There's nothing. Like it's here are the facts. You know, it's up to you. It's more. It's an older population, so I think they're more inclined to want to protect themselves. And they've gotten the shot. So, but I think the piece and the data, and they're being really. And the other thing is, they're just being so transparent about the process. They're saying, look, we're seeing a decline in antibodies from people who have already gotten the jab. They're not trying to hide this information. They're not making it political. They're being honest. They're saying, for those people that got vaccinated at the very beginning, here's what they're noticing. And
they didn't have to mandate anything?
No. No. No mandates. It's amazing. You just don't hear any sort of this like anti, you know, vaccine movement. You don't hear people freaking out, making it political, saying that you're trying to, you know, you're trying to hurt somebody, et cetera, et cetera. It's just fascinating. It's really fascinating. So now that they've run out of people, like what comes next? This is going to be the interesting question, but I really think that this is like a case study country right now. Cause like, okay, the data is showing us that hospitals have, you know, they're complete, like really like empty now. Deaths have all but dried up and stopped as a result. They're reopening completely. So what next? Now we're going to pay attention to these antibodies as we head into this like cooler temperatures. You know, it's going to be, and I'll be here. you know, I'll report on it. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see, because early on, I mean, they were doing pretty well. And then they, like last year, before the vaccine, they let everyone go back home for Christmas. You know, the country was like, look, it's a Catholic country. There's no way we're going to keep Johnny or Joao from seeing grandma, you know, there's no way in a Catholic country that's going to happen during Christmas. Right. So the government was just like, hands up, forget about it. And then we saw an explosion of cases after everyone got together at Christmas time. And then we had to deal with like 3 months of a lockdown again because of the Christmas. So now the vaccine hit, and now there's no, like, deaths have all but dropped to virtually nothing, and hospitalizations have dropped virtually nothing. So,
well, and I feel like all these other countries are taking a very informed approach with data. You know, like you said, they called to follow up with you, and they're actually taking, yeah, they're actually taking data. And I don't think that's what's going on over here. It's more about, it's just other things. It's so politicized. They don't really get into the data the same way.
Well, and I should say we have 50 states with 50 governors, with 50 legislators and 50 legislators and all kinds of politics. And
right, but you don't even see singular states trying to do that.
Right, yeah. I mean, maybe California is the only one. There's an article about, you know, maybe what California could show.
I mean, you could even argue it doesn't even go down to the individual hospital level. Like if you had a hospital and you were in a state and you like actually cared about it, like the data, you would be doing the same thing. You don't have to depend on the federal or state government to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's a thing right now. It's like those people, well, I'm going to go off on that because we have YouTube ban me or not. But like, bottom line is, this is what Portugal's doing. Portugal this morning, according to the data this morning, is the most vaccinated country in the world. And it really is a case study now for what's going to happen as we head into the fall. It'll be interesting to see from the antibody perspective, boosters, just overall how we handle this going forward. So we've won the battle, but, you know, we haven't won the war yet. So,
and it's too bad that the only people that will take advantage of that information will be other countries besides the U.S. because we have it all figured out and we do it the right way, and we're not going to pay attention to any data coming from any other country, unfortunately.
Yeah. Imperial Majesty says, stop, Clayton. I don't know what you mean.
Probably don't get yourself in trouble.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Yeah. Don't use those medical terms.
Got to stop. Hey, I'm just, you know, this is the Washington Post, front page of the Washington Post this morning. So, U.S. news about Portugal running out of people to vaccinate. Anyway, there you go. So that's a look at what's going on around the rest of the world and how certain countries are doing that. Here comes the
judge.
You
know, isn't it crazy? What's crazy is like you have all of this news, like this whole 24-hour-a-day news cycle, and what of it right now is good? Like what of any of this information has benefited the people? Like, give me one thing.
Well, I guarantee you they probably haven't covered the worker strike story that we covered today, right? Can you imagine them covering that story?
No way.
They maybe covered Joe Manchin a little bit, maybe on the politics shows, maybe a little bit. But they certainly didn't cover his corruption. They certainly haven't covered that angle of it.
No, because he told them to change the subject.
Right. So they haven't covered that. You'll get that here on our show. I guarantee you they didn't cover the Portugal story.
No.
And looking at why Portugal has been so successful in beating COVID.
Or Norway, like that story.
Yeah, they won't cover those stories.
No.
And you pay for these cable stations. I mean, they're clinging to it right now. I mean, the show's like, you know, you get it like these internet shows, and I'm hoping our show grows and grows and grows. You know, you share this show with as many people as you can in your family. You know, our goal is to drive, you know, make this show bigger than anything that's like on the networks.
When Brian Stelter hit 700,000?
Yeah, yeah.
Or something like that?
We're beating certain CNN shows right here on this channel. We are beating CNN shows on this channel.
Which is part of why YouTube is on the warpath.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and that's the thing. All these big companies are scared right now. Like, you know, these cable companies, these news stations, they're scared. Like, what are you going to do? What are they going to do when people stop like tuning in to CNN and MSNBC?
And you know who we really honestly at the end of the day have to thank for that? It's Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan has helped solidify new media. You know, like these podcasters and stuff. I mean, the establishment news network is threatened by people like Joe Rogan and people like us. And that's why there is an active movement to try to. And again, that's exactly why it's really important that you guys are on the newsletter, because if anything happens, like when we were taken down for 7 days, the only way Clayton could let you guys know what was going on was the newsletter, because they blocked us from being able to post anything.
Yeah,
and that's why we want you on that newsletter, so that if anything happens and we all, like, all of a sudden we're gone and we need to send you guys somewhere else, we would not have no way to let you know.
Yeah. So please, please, please go to morninginvest.com right there. Subscribe to our daily newsletter. It's totally free. It's at least one way that we can connect with you if, God forbid, YouTube yanks us for some reason because we're covering the truth here and they don't like something someone says or whatever and they pull it down. They literally just took down over 1 million videos or more across YouTube. So this is what we have to deal with, you know? Please make sure you subscribe to the newsletter. That way we'll be able to drive you to a different video source if something happens here to the show.
Also that we've also got other channels. So if you guys go over to youtube.com/Clayton Morris, Clayton is covering more financial stuff. Like, you're getting ready to do something with Bitcoin, right?
So I'm going to be covering more of like financial stuff in Bitcoin mining, how to, create some passive income there. So I'll teach you about that on my Clayton Morris channel. So that's youtube.com/Clayton Morris. And then you've got your Overland Geeks channel as well.
Yep. And then on my Overland Geeks channel, I'm focused on overlanding. I just installed a rooftop tent yesterday. So now I've got my rooftop tent. I got an awning. And I'm focused on minimizing, like getting rid of a bunch of stuff and then going overlanding. But I'm also going to be focused on Clayton over here is going to be helping me learn how to invest. And so there's going to be kind of like a beginner thing that we're working on for those of you that are, watch the channel when we were talking about crypto and have wanted to learn how to invest in stocks and stuff or crypto and all that. Clayton's going to help me as a complete newbie. Like, I'm a total noob. So if you're into that stuff, go follow me on youtube.com/Overland Geeks.
Yeah, check that out. And I see someone asking, Vincent says, what is your paranormal channel, Clayton? It is the Paranormal Post.
And you just released a video on wolves.
I did. Werewolf Island. So I love paranormal news. I've covered, UFO stories. I've interviewed generals and members of the military. I've interviewed President Obama's Air Force One pilot who was tracked by a UFO. I did a big interview with him and said, he said, this is very, very common among pilots to see UFOs. They don't talk about it for fear of like retribution. So I've had a deep fascination with the paranormal since I was a kid. So if you're interested in unexplained stories, paranormal stories, come on over and check out, it's all around fact-based stuff too. News reports and things. It's not just like spinning yarns. Come on over to youtube.com/paranormalpost if you're interested in that. Yes, and our most recent video was on the Werewolf Island and how all of these animals just disappeared on this one particular Philippines island. So check that out. Check that out over there. Anyway. All right, I'm going to go rest my voice. I've got more work to do. I've got some videos to produce that I'm going to do for Clayton Morris channel, and I've got some Paranormal Post stuff as well that I'm working on. I'm going to be tearing apart the studio, getting ready for some big things that we're making around, big changes around here. I'm excited about that. So,
can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I'm going to need your help on all of that. So,
oh yeah.
Anyway, all right, my friends, great seeing everyone. Have a great weekend, David. Have a great weekend to all of you in the chat. And Grover says, peace out. Peace out, everyone.
Peace out. Have a great weekend, everybody.